Unit 12. Text A. Let your mind wander. Until recently, daydreaming was generally considered either a waste of time or a symptom of neurotic tendencies. And habitual daydreaming was regarded as evidence of maladjustment or an escape from life's realities and responsibilities. It was believed that habitual daydreaming would eventually distance people from society and reduce their effectiveness in coping with real problems. At its best, daydreaming was considered a compensatory substitute for the real things in life. As with anything carried to excess, daydreaming can be harmful. There are always those who would substitute fantasy lives for the rewards of real activity. But such extremes are relatively rare. And there is a growing body of evidence to support the fact that most people suffer from a lack of daydreaming rather than an excess of it. We are now beginning to learn how valuable it really is, and that when individuals are completely prevented from daydreaming, their emotional balance can be disturbed. Not only are they less able to deal with the pressures of day-to-day existence, but also their self-control and self-direction become endangered. Recent research indicates that daydreaming is part of daily life, and that a certain amount each day is essential for maintaining equilibrium. Daydreaming, science has discovered, is an effective relaxation technique. But its beneficial effects go beyond this. Experiments show that daydreaming significantly contributes to intellectual growth, powers of concentration, and the ability to interact and communicate with others. In an experiment with school children in New York, Dr. Joan Freiberg observed improved concentration. There was less running around, more happy feelings, more talking and playing in the group, and more attention paid to detail. In another experiment at Yale University, Dr. Jerome Singer found that daydreaming resulted in improved self-control and enhanced creative thinking ability. Daydreaming, Singer pointed out, is one way individuals can improve upon reality. It is, he concluded, a powerful spur to achievement. But the value of daydreaming does not stop here. It has been found that it improves a person's ability to be better adapted to practical, immediate concerns, to solve everyday problems, and to come up more readily with new ideas. Contrary to popular belief, constant and conscious effort at solving a problem is, in reality, one of the most inefficient ways of coping with it. while conscious initial effort is always necessary, effective solutions to especially severe problems frequently occur when conscious attempts to solve them have been put off. Inability to relax, to let go of a problem, often prevents its solution. Historically, scientists and inventors are one group that seems to take full advantage of relaxed moments. Their biographies reveal that their best ideas seem to have occurred when they were relaxing and daydreaming. It is well known, for example, that Newton solved many of his toughest problems when his attention was waylaid by private musings. Thomas Alva Edison also knew the value of half-waking states. Whenever confronted with a task which seemed too hard to be dealt with, he would stretch out on his laboratory sofa and let fantasies flood his mind. Painters, writers, and composers also have drawn heavily on their sensitivity to inner fantasies. Debussy used to gaze at the River Seine and the golden reflections of the setting sun to establish an atmosphere for creativity. Brahms found that ideas came effortlessly only when he approached a state of deep daydreaming. And César Franck is said to have walked around with a dreamlike gaze while composing, seemingly totally unaware of his surroundings. Many successful people actually daydreamed their successes and achievements long before they realized them. Henry J. Kaiser maintained that you can imagine your future, and he believed that a great part of his business success was due to positive use of daydreams. Harry S. Truman said that he used daydreaming for rest. Conrad Hilton dreamed of operating a hotel when he was a boy. He recalled that all his accomplishments were first realized in his imagination. Great living starts with a picture held in some person's imagination of what he would like someday to do or be. Florence Nightingale dreamed of being a nurse. Edison pictured himself an inventor. All such characters escaped the mere push of circumstance by imagining a future so vividly that they headed for it. These are the words of the well-known thinker, Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick, and they show that people can literally daydream themselves to success. Fosdick, aware of the wonderful power of positive daydreaming, offered this advice. Hold a picture of yourself long and steadily enough in your mind's eye, and you will be drawn towards it. Picture yourself vividly as defeated, and that alone will make victory impossible. Picture yourself as winning, and that will contribute remarkably to success. Do not picture yourself as anything, and you will drift like an abandoned ship at sea. To get the results, you should picture yourself as vividly as possible, as you want to be. The important thing to remember is to picture these desired objectives as if you had already attained them. Go over several times the details of these pictures. This will deeply impress them on your memory, and these memory traces will soon start influencing your everyday behavior toward the attainment of the goal. While exercising your imagination, you should be alone and completely undisturbed. Some individuals seem to have the ability to tune into their private selves in the midst of the noisiest crowds or company. But most of us, especially when the experience is new, require an environment free from outside distraction. A life lived without fantasy and daydreaming is a seriously impoverished one. Each of us should put aside a few minutes daily, taking short 10 or 15 minute vacations. Daydreaming is highly beneficial to your physical and mental well-being. And you will find that this modest, inexpensive investment in time will add up to a more creative and imaginative, a more satisfied, and a more self-fulfilled you. It offers us a fuller sense of being intensely alive from moment to moment, and this, of course, contributes greatly to the excitement and joy of living.
Text B. To sleep, perchance to dream. So you awoke this morning in a miserable mood. Well, maybe your special dream character didn't put in an appearance last night. Or maybe there just weren't enough people drifting through your dreams. If that sounds like far-fetched fantasy, consider these interesting findings that have emerged from 8 years of sleep and dream research at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Cincinnati, Ohio. While sleep affects how sleepy, friendly, aggressive, and unhappy we feel after awakening, feelings of happiness or unhappiness depend most strongly on our dreams. Each of us has a special dream character, a type of person whose appearance in our dreams makes us feel happier when we awake. What we dream at night isn't as important to how we feel in the morning as the number of people who appear in our dreams. The more people, the better we feel. Our sleep influences our mood. Our mood, in turn, affects our performance. And throughout the day, our levels of mood and performance remain closely linked. During the past 2 decades, research has greatly expanded our knowledge about sleep and dreams. Scientists have identified various stages of sleep, and they have found that humans can function well on very little sleep, but only if they dream. Yet the true function of sleep and dreaming continues to elude precise explanation. In 1970, Milton Kramer and Thomas Roth, researchers at the VA Hospital and the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, respectively, raised this question. Do our moods in the morning relate in any way to our sleep and dreams the previous night? Human experience suggests that they do. Certainly, we generally feel better after a good night's sleep. But Drs. Kramer and Roth sought a much more definitive answer. And that answer, though still evolving, is a positive yes. Kramer and Roth began by seeking to determine whether one's mood differs between night and morning, and whether this is related directly to sleep. They found that there is a difference, and it is definitely related to sleep. Then they explored the various aspects of mood and their relationship to the various stages of sleep and dreaming. What does a good night's sleep mean to our mood? Generally, we are happier, less aggressive, sleepier, and, a bit surprisingly, less friendly. Being sleepier is easily explained. It simply takes a little time to become fully alert after awakening. But why should we feel less friendly? Here the researchers must speculate a little. They suggest the answer may be the lack of association with other humans during the period of sleep. Once the two doctors established scientifically what common sense and folk wisdom had long taught, namely, there is link between sleep and how we feel, they set out to learn what parts of our mood are related to which specific parts of the sleep cycle. Normal sleep is broken into 5 distinct parts. Stages 1 through 4, plus REM, an acronym for rapid eye movement. Much remains unknown about each of the 5 sleep stages. Most dreaming occurs during REM sleep, a period when the eyeballs move rapidly beneath the closed lids. And whether they remember it or not, all adults dream, usually 4 to 6 times a night. 3 types of moods are strongly related to some specific stage of sleep. Our friendly, aggressive, and sleepy feelings all relate to stage 2 sleep, which accounts for most of our total sleep hours. Our friendly and sleepy feelings, but not our aggressive feelings, are affected as well by stages 3 and 4, and by how long it takes us to fall asleep. This means that if you get less sleep than normal, and people vary a great deal in how much sleep they normally require, you awake more friendly, more aggressive, and less sleepy. At this point, the doctors found themselves puzzled. They knew from their earlier work that sleep determines if people feel happier. Yet when they studied the various sleep stages, they found no correlation between sleep physiology and the unhappy mood. Clearly, sleep made a difference. But that difference didn't relate to how much time one spent in each of the various sleep stages. The two researchers decided the key to whether we feel happy or unhappy after sleep must lie in sleep's psychological component, our dreams. So they began studying dream content, what dreamers dreamed, and who appeared in their dreams, to see how this affected mood. Instead of sleeping through the night, volunteers now were awakened 4 times while in REM sleep. They were asked about such things as what their dreams were about, the sex, age, identity, and number of the people in their dreams, and what each person in the dream was doing. Interestingly, Kramer and Roth found that being awakened 4 times a night didn't make a difference in the volunteers' morning mood patterns. But they did find that who appears in a dream has a far greater influence on mood than what occurs in the dream. Who affects all the moods, Kramer says, but primarily the unhappy mood. Each of us, it turns out, has a special dream character. And if this type of character appears in our dreams, we are happier when we awake. For people in general, how unhappy you feel after sleep depends on who is in the dream, Kramer says. Who it is that makes you happier is different for you than for me. For some, it may be an older woman, for example. For others, a young man. Who appears in your dream isn't the only important thing. The more people who appear in your dreams, the happier you are on awakening. It's a case of the more the merrier. The bad thing in a dream is to be alone. You feel worse, Kramer explains. You can relate this to awakening psychology, where being alone leads to more unhappiness. There is something about interacting with people that produces happiness. A number of researchers have examined the relationship of mood and performance. The doctors also checked into this relationship, and they have found some interesting correlations. We found that the more friendly, more aggressive, more clear-thinking, less sleepy, and surprisingly, the more unhappy you are, the better you perform. That last one, the unhappy, I can't explain, Kramer says. Moreover, the level of a person's moods and the level of his or her performance rise and fall together throughout the day. Initially, the two VA researchers worked only with men, because the dreams of men are far easier to study. Men and women dream differently. Indeed, sex is the biggest factor in accounting for differences in the people, activities, locations, and feelings that occur in dreams. Dr. Kramer says, when you compare men and women, you get a greater difference in dream content than when you compare, say, 20 and 60-year-olds, or black and white. Last year, the VA researchers began studying the relationship of sleep, dreams, and mood in women. This work is continuing, but the initial findings reinforce what they had found in men. Overall, the women are just like the men, Kramer says.